Hey gang, welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm Jason Remedy, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal magazine. And as always, that is John Rauhouse playing in the background. Every week on this show, I try to talk to someone interesting from the world of fretted instruments. It could be a maker, it could be a player, it could be someone else entirely. Today, it is one of my favorite new singer-songwriters that has come across my radar, Liz Brasher. She came to our office. She performed on this amazing Gibson SG White, just like Sister Rosetta Tharpe's. And she has pipes to spare. She has an incredible voice. She's based in Memphis now, and that music scene seeps into all of her songs and recordings. If you are at all jaded about the music scene and long for the days when great records were being produced out of Arden Studios or Sun Records and had some soul and some punch to them, I think you will love Liz. We actually captured her play her tune Remain, and that is on our fretboardjournal.com page as well as our YouTube channel. Check that out if you want to hear her music. And the reason I'm fast-forwarding this podcast to today is if you at least live in America, I don't know about all of you folks who don't live in America, but NPR Music is premiering Liz's brand new, her full-length album called Painted Image, and you can listen to that right now on NPR's First Listen page. So check that out. I think you will love it. I know I certainly did, and this was a fun, quick chat that we had where I learned a ton about her, and now I can't wait to see where her career goes. In other Fretboard Journal news, I'm staring at Fretboard Journal 43, and you will be too if you are a subscriber. The Fretboard Journal's 43rd issue is finally mailing to everyone right now. No, don't call me, don't email me. There's no way you have seen it yet. This literally just came off the press, but it will be mailing to everybody and in the U.S. Postal Service over the next week, and you will be seeing it within the next week or two. So I know a lot of you have been waiting for it. It is a very, very cool issue. And if you have yet to subscribe to it, we would love it if you would. We are a reader-supported magazine, which means that subscribers are what allow us to do things like the magazine, do things like this podcast, and all the other fun projects that we do. So you can subscribe at fretboardjournal.com. And for the next week or so, if you subscribe and make a new subscription, we will start you off with that issue, so at no extra cost. So go to fretboardjournal.com. You can even use the coupon code podcast if you are a first-time subscriber, and we will take $5 off of your order. So go to fretboardjournal.com and subscribe and get with the program. Get the Fretboard Journal. You will love it. We have NAMM coming up in a couple of weeks. That's the big musical instrument trade show. I always semi-dread going to that, but I do learn a lot, and there are a lot of cool instruments. But we will be attending, as always, and posting a ton of photos. So if you haven't followed us yet on Instagram or Facebook, please do so. We just hit 30,000 Instagram followers. We must be doing something right, right? So anyways, also on our website right now, Noam Pikilny's installment of our ongoing You Are My Sunshine video series. That is a video series that was prompted by Brian Sutton, who said, what if everyone who came through the Fretboard Journal played the exact same tune and gave us their interpretation on it? So we started off with Brian's interpretation, and now we've got Noam Pikilny's up, and he's playing, he's rocking the Plectrum National Tricone Resonator guitar, which you don't often see. You often see them at stores. You don't often see anyone actually playing them well, and Noam plays it pretty much better than anyone I've ever heard. So check that out on fretboardjournal.com. And last but not least, a project that is near and dear to my heart, Skip Simmons, who was on this very podcast a month or so ago, and I have launched our own podcast, The Truth About Vintage Amps, with Skip Simmons. And we've just posted our second episode. So please, please, please subscribe to that if you haven't yet on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you consume your podcasts. I will say, without a shadow of a doubt, I have learned more from the first two episodes of Skip Simmons' podcast than I have learned in a year's worth of listening to other podcasts, even my own, even this very podcast. Skip sprinkles so many little hacks and tips into all of the responses he gives, and I'm constantly taking notes, and now I want to tear apart all of my amps that I have. So even if you, I will venture to say, even if you only have one or two amps, you might enjoy this podcast just because Skip is a true character and kind of a lovable curmudgeon. And he has candid responses to all of the questions that are fed to him by me. So anyways, check that out if you haven't yet. The response to it has been tremendous. We've gotten way more emails about it than many of the other projects we do. So a bunch of you are responding to it, which is what I love. And we'll keep them coming. So The Truth About Vintage Amps with Skip Simmons, hosted by yours truly. All right, we are going to get to my conversation with Liz. Again, her new record, Painted Image. It's her first full-length album. She's put out some singles and EPs in the past. It's incredible, and if you want to get a sneak peek of it, you can listen to it on NPR First Listen. Otherwise, be patient, and it'll show up on all your feeds in a week or two. So, again, thanks so much, everybody, and here's my conversation with Liz Brasher. Liz, thanks for coming to the Fretboard Journal.
Thanks for having me.
So, through the magic of electronic failures, we've gotten to hear you twice.
I'm sorry.
And no, it blows me away. Where did you come from?
I'm based out of Memphis right now, but I came out of Matthews, North Carolina.
Which is where?
Which is a little town outside of Charlotte.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was there any local music scene that you were kind of tapped into?
Oh, so I grew up actually singing in the church. Okay. So that was like my local scene. I was like primed inside of the church singing with my family and my mom and all her siblings. And so I got started there. And then I just fell in love with rock and roll. So I discovered the Beatles and fell in love with what I was hearing there, and Zeppelin and different bands like that. And yeah, there was a little local music scene, but it's nothing I want to talk about now.
Okay. Yeah. It wasn't the old timers coming from the hills. Yeah. No. Serenading with banjos.
No.
Okay.
None of that. No. It was like heavy metal.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when did you take up guitar?
So I picked up guitar when I moved to Chicago, actually. Okay. So when I was there, I was just confronted by a drummer friend of mine about my lack of music history knowledge. And so he took me back and he was like, you need to study. If you want to start writing songs now, you need to know what came before you. So that's when I really had an appreciation for music from the South. And that's when I delved into the Delta blues and gospel, like, you know, the Staple Singers and things like that. And yeah, I just started playing then.
This guy sounds like a big brother.
He still is. Phil Potter. Yeah.
Yeah. So then what took you to Chicago?
I was there going to school. Okay. And I was so depressed in the winter that I picked up a guitar and started playing and writing songs. So I only lasted like 3 years there and then came back down to the South.
Got it. Mm-hmm. So what, I mean, were those early songs? Right now, your music is like all these kind of different things hitting you at once. There's some soul. There's some amazing kind of garage rock elements. Where did you start? What kind of songs were you writing?
So actually, the first song I wrote is a song that you can find now. It's called Cold Baby, and it's very much a soul ballad. So I was listening to a lot of Otis Redding at the time and just anything that was coming out of Stax Records. And so my early stuff was like that on an acoustic. So I was just trying to figure out how to accompany my voice with this new instrument.
Yeah. And were you playing in Chicago?
Very little. I think I played one terrible show and never played again. Yeah, it was all super new to me. So I had always fronted bands, local bands in high school, but I had never played guitar and led a band. So that was my first intro to that.
Got it. And then was the move to Memphis like strictly musical?
Yeah, primarily. I mean, for me, I would say it's like musical and spiritual too, all these things in one. Went there with my band out of Atlanta to go record in Memphis. And of course, I had known all the history that came out of there, but being there, I was just hit with something completely different. And I just fell in love with the town and was like, I have to get here as soon as possible. So within like 6 months, there I was. So
what is the music scene like in Memphis these days?
It's really cool. It's still as diverse as you'd imagine, you know, because we've got Stax, we've got Sun, and we had Gold Wax that came out of there. And it's very much like that. You can find anything from hip hop to garage rock still, like Jacko and the Oblivions are still there. And you can find more like folksy duos. Will Sexton and Amy Levere are phenomenal too. And we've got Matt Rosbang producing out of there. So he's producing all these huge all these huge Americana hits and also songs for Al Green, just mm-hmm. just crazy stuff. So it's a cool, magical place to be.
That's cool.
Yeah.
When you're touring like you are now, you've got a small pedal board, and then we've got this, basically the Sister Rosetta Tharp.
That's it.
Gibson was, that's what you're touring with?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
And was it all intentional? Like, I want a guitar like hers?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Before this guitar, I was playing a white Tele because that's what Steve Cropper played on.
Okay.
And then, you know, once I became obsessed with Sister Rosetta Tharp, I was like, how can I even remotely come close to her sound? Well, I have to play that guitar. I have to know what that guitar sounds like. And as soon as I played it, it was like a match.
Nice. Yeah. Do you have a relationship with the Gibson company at this point? Or
I don't. No, I
did
don't.
Did they pay for that?
No, but they better soon. No. No, but thanks for popping that in right there.
Yeah, well, they're a company in transition. We'll see.
Yeah, that's true.
What amp are you using?
A Deluxe Reverb, Fender Deluxe Reverb. Yeah.
So what's next for you? Where are you off to? What are you...
So we're just, tonight is actually our last show with the Zombies. We've been on tour with them, which has been great. And then after this, I go on tour with the Psychedelic Furs all of October and November. Yeah, we went on tour with them for 5 days, and they just loved us, and we loved them so much that they asked me back out for longer. So
that's cool.
Super cool.
And how did the connection with Fat Possum kind of come together?
So that all happened in Memphis. Okay. I showed up as a total unknown after I'd gone through 3 pretty rough years of trying to like just force myself into the music industry, and showed up to just record some demos with this producer, Scott Bomar. And the next thing I know, Bruce Watson of Fat Possum is walking in through the studio and listening to the songs. And he took us to a barbecue place the next day and explained the contract. And there it was. So
that's about as Memphis as a recording deal can get.
Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't happen like that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty wild.
Were you playing around Memphis much? No.
No, I had never gotten out of... Atlanta was the only place that I had played.
Okay.
Honestly. So, because I lived there for 3 years after Chicago. So between Chicago, Charlotte, and, you know, my younger years, and Atlanta, that was all I knew.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, I hear so many strains of great music in your music, and we've talked about a couple guitars that your heroes played. What are you listening to in the car right now?
So we were actually just playing on the drive from, where were we? We were in LA to Portland.
Okay, a long
a long drive. Yeah. But one of the albums that we really focused in on was Colin Blunstone's solo record, his first solo album called 1 Year. Okay. Because I'm in Zombies mode
now. Yeah, you are.
And that record is truly phenomenal. It's got huge string arrangements. His voice is, you can't even touch his voice. And it's got songs that will remind you a lot of the Zombies too, just because Rod helped to write some of those. So
yeah,
it's a good record.
So when you're touring with these guys, do you get to like hang out and pick their brains about stuff, or is it pretty much like you just come in, do your job, and
They've been super approachable, and they're so sweet. You know, for having a 50-year legacy, you wouldn't be able to tell. Like, yeah. I'm more nervous, I think, so I'm not approaching them as much because I don't want to be that obnoxious fangirl that I am. Yeah. But no, they've been absolutely phenomenal with us. Yeah. So.
And that has to be one of the coolest crowds you could be kind of showcasing your music in front of. They're obviously into like great music, and they're probably open to younger artists.
Yeah, they've really blown us away night after night, like just the response that we've gotten from them, and they have really cool fans. Yeah. I mean, if you know who the Zombies are, you're cool in my
list.
You've
already been filtered through all the right channels.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Liz, thanks for coming by.
Yeah,
the songs were awesome.
Thanks.